Lunch with Pippa Hudson. And now,
Consumer Talk, featuring Wendy Nola.
Well, thank you, Tony, Vic, and all the others doing the sums for me in the background. 500,000 miles is approximately 800,000 kilometers. So that's what a Tesla's done on battery life. Thank you very much for the quick conversions, everybody. Wendy Nola, always lovely to have you with us in studio to talk consumer affairs. We are following up today on a call that came in last week during the show about third-party insurance. And then we will make some time in the second half hour for your open line consumer calls. We've got a number of them that have already come in as emails, but remember, if you want to phone in, the number is 021-446-0567. Wendy, just remind us, this is picking up on a story that started on last week's show.
Yes, we had a call from somebody who felt very aggrieved, Malcolm, of Durbanville, that he had been stationary at the traffic light. Somebody had hit into him from behind, and they have insurance. I've got two cases. I mustn't mix them up. They have insurance. He doesn't. He's a pensioner. And he obviously, as he wants the other party's insurance company to, which is Santam in this case, to pay to settle a third party insurance claim.
So we'll get to Malcolm and the details of his story just now, but let's just get some context first.
So that's got me. I investigated that a little bit, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But if you're not to blame for the damage caused to your car by another motorist, it's really natural to expect the other party, or at least their insurer, to pay. It seems only fair. Mm. I mean, so many people say, it's not fair. Why should I pay? I didn't cause this accident. But there's a reason why I almost always tell people, if they have their own insurance, to actually feel that injustice, let it distill a little bit, and then go ahead and claim on their own insurance policies anyway. Because it's actually, all told, it's the best option for them. So yes, you have to pay the excess and you lose your no-claim bonus, but dealing with someone else's insurance company as a third party can be the most frustrating, long-winded process. It really, really saps people. Mm. For starters, and this is what a lot of people don't understand, you have no contractual relationship with somebody else's insurer. They owe you nothing. They are obliged to cover their client against having to pay for your car's repairs out of their own pocket and to spare them legal action related to that, right? So they can and often do take a very long time to process that third-party claim, while you, as the third party feeling aggrieved, how that works is the insured driver is the first party. The insurance company that they have a contract with, a policy with, is the second party, and you are the third party, right? So you have no right, really, to contact them and make demands on them at all. But it happens anyway because you feel, well, yeah, your client did this. Now you pay me. But actually, as I say, they owe you nothing. And that's the...
I'm smiling because I've been there, Wendy. And I've actually been the person who made that phone call to the insurance company to say, what's going on? Why is it taking so long? And they all but put the phone down on me because I'm not their client.
You can't go to the ombudsman for short-term insurance because they'll say, sorry, we don't handle third-party disputes because you have no contract with the company.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So that's really one of the most important things I want to stress today. So even if that person caused the accident by failing to stop at a red traffic light, their insurer will apply what is known as apportionment of damages. So you'll get told that you failed to keep a proper lookout. I get these monthly. You're required to keep a proper lookout. And they'll say that it was a 60-40 blame situation. And there's case law. They'll trot out the same case. And so they'll pay 60% of your repairable. If someone went through a red light, their client, as mentioned to you, they'll say, well, you didn't keep a proper lookout. You can imagine how the furious emails I get about this.
You've done nothing wrong.
But there's legal precedent.
Shot a red light.
So that's the other reason why I say, you know what, rather spare yourself all of that and just claim on your own insurance if you have it. But in today's case, we're going to talk about, unfortunately, Malcolm Towns of Durbanville didn't have his own insurer. So he's not insured. And so he had to rely on a third-party claim payout.
Okay, so just a reminder, Malcolm was stationary at a red traffic light. So there's no question that he did anything wrong.
You can't
wasn't
keep
looking
a proper
out,
lookout for a man about to, or a person
barrel just, into you who didn't stop. Okay, but he was the filling in the sandwich, unfortunately, because that car hit him and then that propelled his car into the car in front of him. So he has damage to the front and back of his Toyota Taz. And 2 months later, he is still, I believe, driving around in that car, bashed up as it is. Malcolm's with us on the line. Malcolm, again, I'm so sorry that this happened to you. So here you are, you're still driving the car with the damages. Have you been given an estimate of what it is going to cost to repair those damages?
Yes, I've had both the two quotes done, and they've been sent off. The damage is between just under 18,000 and just under, well, just over 19,000.
Okay, so in the vicinity of 18,000 or 19,000 rand. Now, I know you have no insurance, but the driver who drove into you does have insurance. Have
quite
you
correct.
Tried? What's happened in your attempt to liaise with their insurance broker?
Well, you know, the frustrating thing is that they, when I reported it to them, but tried to get hold of the gentleman that ran into me. That took 3 weeks because he went away on holiday and everything. Eventually got hold of him, found out who his insurer was, and then submitted the claim. They sent me all the requests. They sent me documents that I had to have printed out and fill in and get sworn affidavits. And it was a whole palaver of documents to fill, which I duly sent off. And only then to find out that, no, sorry, but we can't help you here because their client is not acknowledging their request for information from him. So as I mentioned to Wendy, that's what's making it so frustrating for me, because this gentleman is just ignoring everything. As if he in fact told me on the occasion when I did get hold of him, he told me, no, but I must take him to court.
Oh, goodness.
What must I take you to court for? You insured, you know. So,
that is the mystifying part. Those words don't normally come from people who have an insurance policy in place.
Yeah.
So without going into too much detail, Malcolm, we did discuss the fact that there was some suggestion from the broker that his claim may be repudiated because of the fact that there was some roadworthy issues with his vehicle. Let's not go into the detail of that, but as I said to you, and I think I said it on air last week, the two claims are separate. His claim as the insured, and then the third-party claim, which protects him against you coming after him and having to, for the repair of your car, which you obviously would have a claim on. There was no doubt that you were stationary, he hit you from behind. There's no doubt where the blame lies there.
Right, yeah.
At that point, I took the case up with Sintam, mm-hmm. and I said that, aren't these two separate processes, why is the third-party claim not proceeding? I went directly to Sintam, and their response was that the broker is still in the process of considering the claim for our insured. The broker has requested the insured to furnish it with certain information, which it has yet to receive. Bear in mind, this is 2 months on. It should also be noted that the third-party claim has not yet been rejected or accepted, as our insured's claim is still being validated. So it's the door's not completely shut, Malcolm, and I promise you I'm going to carry on until we get a finality on this. But I'm hoping the media attention will help a little bit.
Okay, yeah, wonderful. Yeah, just to mention one thing, that the gentleman concerned that drove into me, he never claimed from his insurance, and that's why they're dragging their feet, also saying they haven't had a claim from him, so hence they can't process any further. Yeah, exactly.
Did he have noticeable damage to his vehicle, Malcolm?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, the front of his vehicle looks much like the front of my vehicle because, you know, there was no stopping, there was nothing. It was just full on ran into me. And just another point to mention, that the lady in front of me was insured by insurance. Her damage has been paid, and now she's been in touch with me to find out who his brokers were, because obviously insurance want a claim from them. Now, yes. I'd love to know if that claim ever gets settled, because if they're settling her damage, then I'm sitting in the middle. What about me? You know,
so that's the thing. Thanks for mentioning that. So if you are not to blame for an accident, and you do what I think is best in most cases, you stop relying on them. Stop. Get over the fact that it wasn't your fault. Why should you claim on your own insurance? If you go ahead and claim, your insurer will then at least attempt to get the excess that you've been made to pay from the other
party. The faulty party, yeah.
Especially if he's insured, it's easier for them than to go after a private party. In many cases, because I often ask people to let me know if that in fact happens, because it does take a few months. Mm-hmm. And I've had many people come back to me to say, yes, actually.
In the
end.
They
were successful, and I at least got my excess back. Doesn't help you if you've lost your bonus, but it really is, in most cases, and I stress most cases, it really is the easiest thing to do. But a lot of people can't get past the sense of injustice clusters around that, which I do understand.
Completely.
And why should I? It's not fair. And then I just say, if you can, honestly, I've been doing this for a long time. If you could just park that, it will be better for you in the long run.
Okay. So Malcolm, Wendy will continue to press on this case. You please keep in touch with us and let us know if there are any developments or communication with you on your side.
Or if you need send a reminder or something.
Okay. Malcolm, thanks for coming on again. We're going to take a short break and continue the conversation around third-party insurance after this.
Cape Talk.
Consumer Talk.
WhatsApp 072-567-1567.
Hi. This is regarding third-party claim. 4 months ago, my car was parked outside my son's house, and the neighbor reversed out of his driveway straight into my car. He didn't even look. 4 months later, I'm still waiting for monies to be deposited into my account.
Yeah, unfortunately, many such messages coming through.
Yes.
Yeah, Wendy, lots of people, three or four people sending SMSs saying, well, I'm glad Malcolm didn't crash into me. I have no sympathy for someone who didn't have his own cover. How quickly would Malcolm be paying up if the victim he bashed into was someone with no insurance, etc.? Malcolm's not in the minority, is he?
He's in the majority. 70% of cars on South African's roads are uninsured. So the insured are the 30%. There are many reasons why people don't have insurance. We're not going to debate them here. If an uninsured person smashes into someone with insurance, that's fairly simple. If not, yes, you do have a point. That would become a financial issue. If the person doesn't have means, you're wasting your time going after them. So, it's very unfortunate if two people crash into each other and they both have no insurance.
Yep.
That's an unfortunate situation.
Malcolm's case, I know, is not the first third-party claim you've been looking at, because John actually called you in on another such case
a couple of months ago. Yes. Yeah. So it was a week after Malcolm's accident. Actually, I looked at the date. So it's 8 days later, the end of August, Brent, David's and his wife, they were newlyweds, were on their way to the Blisters for Bread big walk when they came to a stop in heavy traffic, as one does, on Nelson Mandela Boulevard opposite the Virgin Active Gym. While they were stationary, absolutely stationary, exactly the same thing as in Malcolm's case, a bucky smashed into their Ford Figo, which they had bought just 4 months earlier, at quite a speed, around 80 kilometers an hour, caused quite a bit of damage, as you can imagine, and the two of them had whiplash. It was the opposite case from Malcolm's, though. So Brent had insurance, and the chap that bashed into them did not. Okay.
Okay.
The scenario that some of our callers are talking about, I suppose. Brent's insurer, Maway, said the car was a write-off, which is what happens when the repair bill is more than around 70% of the value of the car. That's what insurers do. He was told that he'd be paid out 106,000 rand, but he still owed the financing bank, MFC, 147,000, because he just bought the car, right? So all that interest, leaving him with a shortfall of around 40,000. You can imagine how aggrieved, for want of a better word, Brent felt. He said, what happens to the guy that was at fault? I've asked my insurer what they will be doing, what legal action they will take to get my excess money back from him. He said, I think it's completely unfair. It was not my fault. And if the gentleman was more aware on the road, none of this drama would be happening. Is there any way that I can take legal action to get the 40,000 rand shortfall I owe the bank? So John brought me on air to discuss that. I said, yes, he could. Of course he could, as the injured party, but that would be very expensive and take a very long time. He could sue through small claims court, but their limit is only 20,000 rand, half of what he was owed. Anyway, a few days after my on-air chat with John about the case, I've only just found this out. Mahaway got hold of Brent to say that they will settle with the insurance company. So he didn't still owe that 40,000 rand, but he's still in a bad situation because 2 months on, he's had no word about getting his excess payment back from the other driver. Remember, I said it can take months.
Yeah.
And he lost the 30,000 rand deposit that he put down on the car 4 months before the accident. So now they can't afford, they don't owe the bank, thankfully, but they can't afford
to buy another
car. So, yeah, it's a total inconvenience, he said to me this week, and yes, that and all the rest. So the car accidents insurance, it's a very thorny, tricky issue, and it causes a lot of people financial and emotional distress.
And it's just a lot of stress and aggravation. And I say that as somebody who's busy going through a claim myself right now of exactly this nature, something that was not my fault, but that I'm really struggling to get fixed.
Yeah, so
without
you bear all the consequences.
Consequences to me. Yeah. Anyway, deep breaths. We've got a voice note from somebody else about a no-claim bonus. Let's take a listen. I think we have a voice note. Do we?
Hi, Papa and Wendy. This is Karen from Durbanville. I just want to give an input on my story about what happened about an accident where I actually got my no-claim bonus back from my insurer because the guy wanted to claim from my insurance, even though it was his fault. And I think it took about 6 months, and they sent me a letter to say that they actually got the money back for the repairs from his insurer. And I wasn't even going to claim it back, but he persistently asked his insurance to contact me about the claim, even though it was his fault. Yeah.
Oh, so in the end, you got it. Thank goodness, and well done for tapping it out. Yeah.
So she got a no-claim bonus back. I presume if she didn't mention her exes, but I would imagine that as well, because that's the first thing you would get back.
Nice to know that it can happen.
So, and we've spoken on air about this many times as well. This scenario plays out when your car gets damaged at a dealership, when somebody else's, some company's delivery truck sideswipes you in the freeway. They always just claim from your insurer. I mean, and as much as that rankles, I mean, it's the easiest thing to do. But when, in cases when people don't have insurance, these cases play out for months and months, months. The companies just, in so many cases, they just do not deal with it, which I think is a terrible indictment on the company.
I think we can squeeze in one more call about car accidents and claims before we move on to some open line questions. Bob in Goodwood, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My question is that if I have an accident today and the repair comes to, let's say, 200,000 Rand, it's a serious accident, and I keep the car, have it repaired, and 3 years later I want to trade it in, the dealer who I traded in with has a way of getting access to the information about the car through the VIN number. And then they see that the car's been in an accident and it is now therefore lower in trade-in value than it should have been.
Is that correct?
Well, it's technically possible, and I suppose they could use that because as a reason to offer you a lower trade-in, because if you were buying the car and you were privy to that information, you would want to pay a lower price. But here's the thing. Do they pass that information on to the buyer? In most cases, I would venture to say no.
Yeah, but they've got access to it at the dealerships. They can look it up and see that.
Let me rewind a little bit, because I've investigated a lot of cases of accident damaged cars, and the dealer will say they have no way of knowing that information, that they don't, it's not available from the VIN, and the insurers don't at this point anyway share that kind of information between themselves and the financing banks. Remember the Fiat that got drowned?
I think we did, yes.
Yeah. So I'm not sure that the dealers actually are able. You can get lots of things from a VIN number, servicing history and all the rest. I don't think currently that you can get accident history.
Okay, Bob, you've raised a very interesting point. And if anybody listening wants to add to that with expert knowledge from the industry, we would welcome that.
If that's possible, then no dealer at any time has any reason to say they didn't know about accident damage.
Yeah. And we know so many of them do make that claim. So, all right. Thanks, Bob, for an interesting point. Right. I did say we'd make some time for open line comments. And before we go to Hugh, just a quick one. Jenny got in early with an email, which I did promise we would reflect on one of our old favorites, price discrepancy. Discrepancies between what is the price on the shelf and what is the price on the till. So Jenny mailed to say she'd been shopping at Clicks at the V&A waterfront and bought a Woman and Home magazine to take for a friend who's in hospital. The price of 42 Rand was clearly labeled on the front cover, but at the till, it automatically ran up scanned as 45 Rand. I queried the charge, a manager was called, and I was given the outstanding 3 Rand in change, but I wonder how many other people have been caught unwittingly. Wendy, the reason I'm entertaining this is remind us, please, what is meant to happen when there is a discrepancy between what is on the shelf and what is rung up at the till.
So the minimum thing that should happen is what happened in this case. She pointed it out, but as she says, how many people wouldn't notice? I've ventured to say quite a few. And you need to be given the price at the till, or in this case, printed on the magazine as the retail selling price. There are a couple of stores, Pick n Pay and Woolworths, that for several years now have gone further and offered consumers a compensation, a form of compensation, if the price that scans at the till is not the same as that on the shelf. It has to be the same barcode, obviously, the identical product. But, so in Pick n Pay's case, it's double the difference. Mm-hmm. So if it was in this case, the compensation would have been R6, the difference being 3. So she would have got it at the lower price minus R6. Mm-hmm. In Pick n Pay's case, she would have got the magazine free. If she was buying two women in homes, one for herself and one for her friend, she would have paid the lower price for the second one. That's at Woolworths. I have to say, though, that I get a constant stream of emails from people, shoppers at both those chains, who say that happened to them, and the managers or the cashier were like, no, what? No, Paul.
Don't know anything.
And the
about
most
it.
Recent one was actually at Pick n Pay. Andy Miller said she was at Pick n Pay. This was the 9th of October. I was at Pick n Pay in Lakeside a little while ago, and they overcharged me for something. I pointed out that they were committed to refunding at double the difference. I was informed by the manager that this no longer applies. I said that there was still a notice board to this effect at the Fishhook branch, and he said that this must be because it's a family store, but no longer applies at the Lakeside branch. So she went on a bit, but I went to Pick n Pay and I said, does this still apply, or are any stores exempt? The answer was, it still applies. No stores are exempt. Double the difference. If any item scans at a higher price than displayed on the shelf and the barcode corresponds, we will give you the item at the marked price plus double the difference off the first item and subsequent items at the lower price, which is what
I've
said.
So it is very much.
And I know that Woolworths policy still does apply. They don't do a very good job of advertising it, but it is store policy, and not just foods, it's across all retail.
Okay.
So that's, and I can't remember which one, and I can't find it suddenly on the spot now, but one of the other chains, when I raised one of these wrong price things, I said, would you consider introducing a compensatory policy such as Pick n Pay and Woolworths? And they said, we are thinking about it. So I might have some news on that score. I don't want to guess at which company that was, but it was a big retailer.
Okay. Right, let's go to Hugh. Thank you for waiting so patiently, Hugh, to speak to us. Good afternoon. Your question is around Telkom.
Yeah, I know there are a million complaints about Telkom, and I must say, for a communications company, they're very, very good at keeping their customers away from them.
I agree.
I just try and look up a number for Telkom other than the damn call center and see how far you get. I had a copper system for 25 years. It finally collapsed. I mean, I understand all that. Absolutely fantastic service, the finest technicians I've ever met. They then converted me to a fixed wireless system with a Huawei LTE router.
Yes.
It worked fine for 2 months, and then it packed up along with 6 other phones at Smiths Winkle Bay. Now, Smiths has no communications there. There's no cell phone transmission, or almost none. Even WhatsApp occasionally works, but it takes up to 1 hour, 2 hours for messages to come through. But I cannot find anyone in Telkom that I can talk to. This is, I think, a very technical problem with it going through first MTNs and then Vodacom's towers, and some techie has probably fiddled with the thing there or moved the aerial or something. And you cannot find anyone who can actually deal with this problem.
You know what, Hugh? Thank you for raising this. In the last week, I've had a rash of these exactly the same. Not around we don't want to take it away, but about we've got it and it's broken and we can't get it fixed. So please, please send me an email. I will bundle them all together and send them through to the Telkom person who most recently has proved himself to be helpful with my queries. And hopefully this is an important issue when you consider how many people it will affect. So please, Hugh, if you wouldn't mind dropping me an email, I would like to be able to investigate this properly and come back with something.
So, yes, I did send you an email, but I'm sure it got lost in the welter of other ones you get.
I'll search for your name in Telkom and I'll find it. Thank you.
Okay.
My prime problem is it worked for 2 months, but it's now a year that I haven't had a landline at Smiths. I'm 74 years old. You know, who knows what can happen.
And it's a security risk. I mean,
course.
That's unacceptable.
Hugh, when did it go on the blink?
It went on the blink last October.
And oh, so you haven't had it. I've got it.
I must have made 20 calls.
I misunderstood you, sorry.
And they, 20 calls to the call centre. They just cannot do it.
No, okay, let me. Okay. I'll do
definitely
my best
to,
for your case and send them the other ones, the more recent ones as well. Thank you.
Okay, Hugh, thanks for flagging that. We're going to search and try and find your email and follow up on that. I think we can squeeze in one last call from Ross, who has given us a call from Thornton, wanting to talk about an online shopping experience that hasn't worked. Ross, Wendy knows I am jinxed when it comes to online shopping. It always goes wrong for me. I have one nightmare after another. I believe I'm not alone. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. Yes, I think this started in June this year, and I've come to the conclusion, a very long story short, that this company called Frugo will communicate with one. I've made two overseas calls. It's actually based in Cumbria in Wales, so it's a long way away. And it has a rating with Hello Peter of 4% satisfaction. So you can imagine it. And I originally thought that it was just inefficient, but now I was promised, as I say, to cut a very long story short, a refund within 2 to 5 days, business days, and that was on September the 24th. So I'm pretty sure that they are geared up to just try and push everything aside so that you are in a position of just getting fatigued and giving up. But I thought this was something which should be taken care of, and people should really be very, very careful when they do business with a company that is overseas, because, as I say, with a 4% approval rate at Hello Peter, that should have been for me, really.
So do that online research before you pay. And there's another reason I issued a warning about. I just did a little search in my inbox. I issued a warning about Frugo in 2017. They appear to deliver on occasion. So a woman called Vina Hayden of Port Elizabeth, she Googled a brand of Aqua dumbbells. She landed up on the UK-based international retailer Frugo. They were UK-based then.
They still are. Wales.
Okay,
so
Wales.
Yeah.
And was quoted a price of R430 in Rand, including shipping, and was happy to confirm and pay. These Facebook ads are notorious. She said, I knew they were coming from the UK, but I couldn't find a local supplier. She had the backlog at customs. She had all the problems going on. She waited 6 weeks longer than usual. But here's the thing. She was made to pay customs duty of 115 rand. So she paid 540 rand all told for a product which sells for just £10 in the UK. She said, I could kick myself because I'm visiting London in November. So my point is, they're not all Amazon. When you're buying from a site overseas, first of all, they don't give one jot for CPA and all of that operational in this country. And they don't all include all the costs as Amazon does. So on top of that, when it lands there, you're going to be paying hefty customs and duty and VAT and all the rest. So buyer beware. Be very, very careful about overseas sites, please, especially in the run-up to Christmas when people are looking to buy some presents that way.
Ross, I'm so sorry it happened to you, but thanks for calling in to share that story so that others can learn from your bitter experience.
Okay. Thank you.
Right,
Ross
and Thornton, beware when shopping with Frugo, F-R-U-G-O, as they're spelt. We have to wrap it up there. Wendy,
I want to do a wrap on sites, local and international, that don't deliver. So if listeners have got stories along those lines, literally as in don't deliver at all, and been going on for months, please let me know. We'll do a show on that in the coming weeks.
Okay, fantastic, and good timing as we head towards that awful Black Friday and then Christmas period where so much of the online shopping goes wrong. So if you have something in that category or an entirely different case you want to raise with Wendy, the email to use is consumer@nola.co.za. It's KNOWLER. She knows a lot about consumer affairs. consumer@nola.co.za, or look for her page, Wendy Nola Consumer, on Facebook. Just a reminder, please put the words Cape Talk in the subject line and just a word or two about the nature of the problem. So Hugh is going to put Cape Talk Telkom Smitsfinkel by, just to help
Wonderful.
Us look for them, keep track of them, and find them in what is a very, very, very full inbox on Wendy's computer. Wendy, thanks so much.
Thanks,
we'll chat again
Pippa.
Next week.
We'll do.